Hi, and welcome to Reasonable Product, the podcast that gives a fresh perspective on technology, organization, and product management in a way that resonates to product and business leaders. I am Salva, and in this deep dive, we'll be talking about measuring KPIs and results, and what can go wrong with all of this. This podcast is intended for business-oriented people, including product managers, and I will give you very concrete tips to measure right. Don't have the time to listen to the full podcast now? Then don't forget to save it for later, and remember for now, the smarter your measures look, the worse they usually are. Now, let's see concretely what can we do to fix them. Whether setting up OKRs or monitoring your product health, or just running experiments, there are countless reasons why, as a product professional, you should be measuring what you do and setting goals. And you should do this right. Being able to rely on metrics, actually having meaningful and well-defined metrics, is your best ally to ensure your product is successful. But most importantly, it is a key element to understand when success is not hitting, and a mandatory tool to make a fast and fact-based decision when it's time to kill. This article is not a guide into the reason why measuring your product performance, experiments, or key results is important, but hopefully, if you made it until here, it's clear why having metrics is the cornerstone of a successful product organization that relies on facts rather than opinions. However, having a set of whatever metrics in place is by no means a guarantee per se. And in the next few minutes, we'll be talking about some common pitfalls in dealing with measures and metrics. A little spoiler, you should spend the majority of your time defining the proper measures, as much time as needed to get solid data, and as little time as possible debating on whether the numbers you're extracting mean. Note that I'm not throwing here exact numbers or ratio of time spent of defining, collecting, analyzing, and that's on purpose. The reality is more complex than this. The exact values that work for your organization will evolve over time, but the overall idea is that solid anticipation of the what's and why you're measuring will set a healthy basis for a consistent decision-making process down the line. If you're far from this setup, chances are that your metrics are flawed and that you're building the rest of your strategy on the sand. In the rest of this podcast, you'll learn why so. Here are four most common reasons why success metrics usually don't work and how we can fix them. First, the issue is with relative changes. This is probably the biggest blind spot I've seen over and over in organizations that are just starting to become data-driven. Defining relative change metrics instead of looking at absolute numbers, it's a pitfall. While in theory, looking at relative improvement seems to like a great idea. Wow, we're growing our revenue by 30% this year. There are in reality several reasons why you should look at absolute numbers instead. Of course, taking relative and absolute together, it's a great way to look at the whole story. But the main point I want to make here is that changes that are measured in relation to their past value are at the root of many problems with your products. So first of all, what do I mean by relative change metrics? Not the word change. Strictly speaking, a relative metric is a number dependent on another number, right? In this sense, a conversion rate is a relative measure. Let's say 5% of the users entering the funnel make it to the end and finalize the purchase. This is a relative expression, and nothing is wrong with it. And this is not our concern here. What you're looking at instead is those relative numbers used to express a goal or an expected result as a change, for example, an increase or decrease. In a metric like, let's increase our traffic 10%, or let's reduce our churn rate by 20%. So let's be clear, there is nothing wrong with increasing our traffic by 10% or reducing our churn 20%. However, there are several reasons why you cannot rely on a relative expression of your performance. Most likely, you don't know how to measure the underneath KPI. And this is by far the top one reason why you should avoid setting relative changing measures alone. 9 times out of 10, teams who define relative goals will feel reassured at the beginning, just to discover later on that they don't know how to measure the baseline at all. By defining your goal as increasing the traffic by 10%, you're not forcing yourself to check that you're able to measure this traffic in the first place? Do you technically have what is needed to measure? Is this measure stable enough over time to make it like a baseline? Are you taking consideration seasonality and other fluctuations? So if you don't master the baseline, you won't master the definition of success. So let me try to clarify this. Seasonality and fluctuation will be there also if you look at absolute values instead of the relative ones. That's not the point. The difference, however, is that by looking at absolute values, you're forced to understand the baseline before you actually define the goals. And this way, you'll be factoring in whatever fluctuation you'd expect from the beginning, instead of taking a blind bet such as let's increase 10%, whatever the baseline was, and regardless of how it will evolve anyway. You're prone to misunderstandings. In this example of increasing traffic by 10%, have you defined exactly which traffic you're talking about? Users or sessions? Including coming from SEO or from advertising? Looking at the exact absolute value you're talking about will ensure alignment in the teams. Oh, you want to raise this 100,000 figure? You mean the unique user coming from advertising then, right? Another problem is that relative values don't tell you the full story. A 10% increase seems like a good deal, but is it going from 200 to 220 users a lot? I don't think so, right? If you don't look at numbers in absolute and comparable terms, you're shooting yourself in the foot before you even start talking about prioritization. So is increasing 10% of traffic 2 times better than saving 5% of existing users? They're often arbitrary, these measures as well. The reality is that these relative numbers are too easy to throw and don't require the necessary reflection and preparation to understand if the goal makes sense in the first place. Why 10% and not 20? Another problem I've got with them is that they prevent rational judgment. Looking at them in absolute terms makes it easier to gauge solutions. Is it realistic to add 10% traffic through advertising? Probably. Is it realistic to pay for 10,000 additional users? Let's probably do the math, right? Because we call it a goal. And all in all, while relative indications can tell a part of the story, I always strongly advise looking at absolute numbers first and phrasing your metrics as a mix of both absolute and relative measures, ideally. For example, increase your organic search traffic by 10% from 100 to 110,000 unique users per month. You can and probably should look at relative numbers, but you definitely cannot call it a day until you're solid on the absolute numbers, baseline, additions, and target. Another problem I want to talk about is the issue we have with the number of metrics. So let's make it easy. Less is more. There are tons of reasons why your business is complex. I understand why you can't summarize all that you're doing in one number, and why you would need a full dashboard of numbers or a document to understand your product. Yeah, there are many more reasons why you should keep the number of metrics you really look at very limited. Let's say KISS, keep it simple and stupid. Your metrics shall not be a vanity of the complexity of your product, but something you can actually rely on to make efficient decisions. The more they are in numbers, the more complex it will be to put them in perspective and to agree on what they mean. What is the result of this? You'll drift into a get filling decision mode at best, or into a no decision mode more likely, and you'll lose all the benefits of going to a data-driven decision process. Deciding on the basis of more than a handful of metrics is likely to be a bad idea. This being said, you can agree on observing a couple of additional metrics if you feel that they might bring value in the future. So this may help to create the baseline you will need in your future iteration, the baseline we talked about already. Another reason against the quantity of metrics is maintenance and soundness. The more metrics you have, the higher the likelihood that you'll have mistakes and errors in them. KPIs are part of the product, and as such, they shall have their own life cycle from the definition, implementation, validation, and maintenance. And needless to say, when the number of metrics goes out of control, on-the-fly measures start to appear. And when they're done in a rush, out of context, and without the full life cycle in mind, chances are that they will create more issues than they actually solve. There is another problem with that, is the known choosing. While having a good and contextual understanding of your product is important, so all these metrics giving you this big picture, I understand, it's also important agreeing on what is key for you. If you agree on the beginning on a limited number of metrics that matter, the future that will be deciding or advocating a decision based on these metrics will be extremely grateful. So, thinking about this future you, put yourself in your shoes, 1 month, 1 quarter from now. Do I want to take the decision now about what is important to look at, or do I want to just defer this decision? And finally, ownership. There is a full discussion I want to make about ownership later, but it goes without saying, the more metrics you have, the less somebody can own them. More about this, I will tell you later, but unfortunately, simplicity and reducing the number of metrics can often lead to another undeserved effect, which is what I call the Frankenstein and other fake metrics. So let's look into this issue or getting the next best metrics or Frankenstein metrics. Let's say we made it into a limited number of metrics, and ideally they're all measurable and expressed as absolute numbers. Great until here, so the worst is behind us. But still, you want to be attentive to a few categories, what I call those fake metrics. And I'm gonna, these fake metrics, the problem with them, they will give you a sense of control where you actually don't. So Frankenstein metrics are those, we've seen it this already, when you have too many metrics is not helping. So what usually teams do here, they try to condensate. A concept we know too well of computer science is compressing information. In other words, if we still have the feeling that all this information is important, but we just are reducing the number of metrics because somebody told us to, many teams are just filling the outputs of different metrics into one complex indicator. And is this helping? No. For instance, one of my product teams once needed to look into a complex optimization problem that included some trade-offs. It was something like, let's improve X, but because we don't know how to measure X, we'll measure Y, W, and Z instead, and say that our matrix is Y plus W times Z. I call this a Frankenstein matrix because they are nothing else than a complex, meaningless mix of heterogeneous measures. They let us feel that we are measuring everything, because in reality we're getting different inputs, but the output we're looking at as a metric doesn't really tell us the story. There is another category of bad metrics, what I call the disconnected proxies. In some other cases, we're interested in behaviors of our product that are just too difficult to single out and measure. In these cases, I've seen many teams coming up with proxy metrics that are just, they look simple, but they're so far from the original problem and assumption to the point that they eventually bring no information about the impact they were trying to make. I call this disconnected because the metric we are using is kind of disconnected from the original problem. A similar but different category is diluted proxies. So similarly to the disconnected, some metrics are difficult to measure directly, so we take the closest higher metric we find. In other words, we try to measure something so large that it cannot single out anymore the real driver and contributor to this change. I believe we are all familiar with a reasoning that goes like, oh, our goal is to increase revenue, so let's make this feature X, which shall contribute positively to the revenue. It will probably do, and it's probably the right thing to do. Nevertheless, we'll really be able to directly correlate feature X with the revenue, or will its positive contribution be diluted in seasonal fluctuations, or are we going too high in the food chain measuring directly the revenue? I call this diluted proxy because looking at the metric into a too broad scope will just dilute the contribution that the metric that is under control in reality. And finally, the fourth biggest pitfall I see is about ownership and rituals. And I want to take some time about this. Now you have a solid set of metrics defined. Remember, this is not a fire and forget exercise, but they've been defined once. And now about the ownership, who will be monitoring those numbers? Ideally, you want at least the whole product team to be familiar with the metrics and involved in their follow-up. But will somebody be looking at them regularly? And who will ensure the data we are retrieving is correct? So define these elements from the very beginning. Rituals. Something else you want to define from day one are the different rituals related to those metrics. Will you be looking at those metrics weekly or daily? And if it's weekly, is anybody gonna freak out because they don't have an update in the middle of the week? So does everybody understand there's gonna be a weekly update? And will somebody summarize a common understanding of the story of these numbers and understand what the numbers are telling us? Will we be reviewing these numbers together in a meeting or rely on each team member to get their own metrics directly from a dashboard, for example, and get their own understanding? So define all of this from the very beginning. Define what is your strategy in looking at your metrics. You could have a regular portfolio review based on some data. And this can be the core of your product decision making. It will make prioritization natural, support a comprehensive communication, which is backed up by data, and help you to proactively sunset features and avoid product debt. Finally, decision making. The first reason why measuring is important is because you want to make an informed decision about the future of your product and the direction you're taking with it. Or it could be just a small experiment, but the same goes for it. It doesn't matter how large or how small the scope is. You want to define the decision-making process from the very beginning. Define well before starting what is the definition of success, what will happen in case of success or failure, and who will make the calls in case of doubt. About the communication. By making your organization a data-driven one, don't forget that you're raising expectations. Management, team members, sales and designer will all be eager to know where we stand with this new metric. So factor your communication in front from the beginning and be upfront about the way updates will be communicated. So I hope all of this gives you an overview, and it should be clear by now what I meant at the beginning, that we should spend more time on defining the right metrics than actually reading them. Because this definition is not just throwing the variable, it comes about getting the right kind of increment. So we spoke about absolute numbers and relative numbers, having ownership, having a metric that's actually worth having. Simplicity doesn't mean simple to put in place, but simple to use and understand. So if you did a proper job in the definition, and if you didn't come up with fake metrics, understanding what numbers are indicating is straightforward. And conversely, if you spend little time in preparation, you get metrics that seem okay at the beginning, but in reality are impossible to obtain, or just using metrics that are too far from what you're moving, you'll be spending a lot of time debating, and what the metric is telling you will not gonna be as straightforward as you thought at the beginning. You'll be spending this time instead of deciding what is next and iterating faster. So when the time comes to set up your metrics, remember a few key points. Absolute versus relative, always go for both, but keep in mind that absolute is king. Less is more, don't get overwhelmed and choose wisely what you're looking at, doesn't matter how complex your product is. Better nothing than a fake proxy. If you can't find the right metric, don't make it up instead. And finally, ownership. Metrics don't live alone, and your best bet is on people looking after them. I think somebody once said, metrics are like a joke. If you have to explain them, they're not funny anymore. Or probably they didn't really say metrics, but it doesn't matter. So thanks for having been with me until here. I hope you enjoyed, and I look forward to welcoming you back to Reasonable Products soon. Remember, you can find the full podcast, articles, and other product management thoughts on my website, reasonableproduct.com, or just follow this podcast on your favorite platform.